Let's begin today with a little, a little warming up of our minds. And remember that we're not talking about something that that we have to do in the sense that if we don't do it, we're going to get the axe. We're talking about something that if you do it, things are better when?
Now.
There you go. So if you don't do it, you're getting the axe. Well, and think about that. That ought to be obvious to us. Okay? It's just the way things are ordered. And if you do evil, what's going to be tomorrow? You're going to have good, you're going to have more evil. And it may be that it piles up and piles up and piles up. And so if we wanted to begin to reverse that trend, what would we begin to do? We'd do good, even in the face of evil, because more evil won't overcome it. So that's the way we want you to think. Let me talk to you a little bit about education, because I think maybe we've lost the concept of what it is to really get an education. Most of us look at education as though it's a means to learning to earn a living. That's what most people really think of education of today, of means of learning to earn a living. And here in these classes, we're going to tell you that it's more important to learn to live. Now, earning a living is important, but the important thing is learning to live. Okay? So let me give you a definition of education. An educated person is one who has stripped himself of all convention, all superstition, and all hypocrisy. With that definition of education, an ancient man 1,000 years ago could have been educated as a person today. Now, listen to it again, and I'll talk a little bit about it. An educated person is one who has stripped himself of all convention, all superstition, and all hypocrisy. Convention. Y'all know what convention is. I've looked a lot of times. What's a better word I could use there? And I don't know. I can't come up with one. Convention. You know, if you ever said to somebody, well, you're just not conventional, what are you saying about them? You don't do it like everybody else does it. Okay. Now, I don't want any of you to think that I'm saying that since everybody else does it, it's wrong. That's a wrong attitude. But if you've just accepted it because everybody else does it, and you haven't examined it, and it hasn't become yours and your belief, then you're uneducated. I mean, and that, you know, that's the way most of us are. Most of us accept everything that comes our way just because they did it. You know what I mean. You know, my God, somebody walks in a room that's got their hair different than ours, and we think there's something wrong with them. You know. Y'all remember when I came along just before this. I'm a real funny person in this. I'm not part of the baby boomers, but I'm just before they started. I was born in 1940. That's just kind of a peculiar time. So when everybody was letting their hair grow down, the guys were letting their hair grow down here to the middle of their waist, I had a butch haircut, you know. So But I knew a lot of people that had their hair growing down here, you know. And I remember the conversations that were going on. What was the real problem we had with that? It wasn't conventional. And an earring in the ear. Now they're getting them into putting them in their noses. Or worse. Don't. Belly button. I mean, you know. But to look at that as though it's wrong just because everybody else isn't doing it is missing the boat. You just really miss the boat. I'll never understand that. I don't understand. I just don't understand it. I don't even want to get into it. Some of you will get offended. I don't understand that. But I'll tell you what. I don't know that there's any different in a man doing it and a woman doing it. Hey. Okay. You know, if... that's very conventional. That women do those things, but men not. Now, I think that's... See, now there's where your convention might be a problem. Why? If it's all right for a woman, why not be all right for a man? Woman wants to decorate herself up and get adorned for a man. Why can't a man decorate himself up and get adorned for whomever? But y'all understand what I'm talking about when I talk about accepting things conventionally. That's got to be right because that's the way everybody's doing it. So here's what when I talk about an education and an educated person, what you need to do is examine those things that are convention, especially when you come face to face with them and you begin to feel that this person or this situation is wrong and it's bad. You need to examine, why are you the way you are? Why am I like this? And most of us will discover it was just handed down to us. We never thought about it very much. Okay? So to strip yourself of convention, see, once you've examined it and say, you know, I really believe this. I believe this is correct. I believe it's the best way that I know of. Then it's yours. If not, something, you know, you've asked people before why, and they just say, well, just because. That means they don't have any idea why, you know. There's a story about, I'll give you a good example of convention. There's a story about a Southern family, and their tradition in their family reunion was to have a pot of white beans with a whole ham cooked in it. This was just a family tradition. You know, you've got them. And so it falls the turn of the youngest married daughter's house to have this family reunion at her place, and she cooks this big pot of beans. And they cook this pot of beans with a whole ham with everything except the hock. The hock is cutting off. So she's cooking this thing, and she begins to think, why in the world do I have to cut that hock off? You know, she probably forgot to have it cut off at the store and got home and had to figure out a way to get it off. Some of you ever had to do that? A hacksaw, you know. But so she goes to her mother, and she says, Mama, why do you cut the hock off the ham? She says, I don't know. Why don't you ask your grandmother? So she goes to her grandmother and she says, Grandma, why do you cut the hock off the ham? She said, I don't know. Why don't you go ask your great-grandmother? So she walks over to this little old weazened-up lady in a chair and she says, Great-grandma, why do you cut the hock off the ham? She says, Honey, I don't know why you do, but we didn't have a pot big enough for it. That's what convention does to us. That's what convention does. Do you know what? Most of us don't know why we do what we do in church. Most of us do not. I'm staying at a friend's house the last couple of nights, and they gave me a book that they were reading, and it had in it where all of the things that we do in the church came from. It's awesome. I got them to order me one. Awesome. I'm going to stand up here and read some of those things to folks, and they'll flip out of their chair. Oh, God, I didn't know that. So you don't have any idea why you're doing it, but I do it. I could go on with stories like that, because there's a story. I'll tell you another one. There's a story about this is an ancient story. This ancient group, you know, they came up on something that brought real meaning into their life as they met, a way of living. And so all of these people would gather together. Nope. They would gather together in this house and have these meetings once a week. And the person that owned the place had a cat. And the cat was a nuisance. I mean, here they're sitting around talking. You know, it's like a little prayer group would be today, and the cat's going from one, people are petting it. And I mean, the cat just becomes a nuisance. So the owner of the house and the leader of this group ties the cat up. At one meeting, they tie the cat up. And pretty soon it gets to be, as the meeting starts, they tie that cat up where it don't cause any problems. So they meet, you know, for 30 years, you know, and tying those cats up. And pretty soon the guy that started this and is having the meeting dies. And they gather in another person's house, and they sit down and they start the meeting. They say, wait a minute, we can't start yet. We got to go get a cat to tie up. You'll be shocked at how many things we do like that. Now, see, there's nothing wrong with tying the cat up, is there? Not the time to cat up, not the problem. But I got to go get one to tie up, or this won't work. Okay. Stripping oneself of all convention. Superstition. Superstition is believing that something produces something that it doesn't produce. That's what superstition is. I believe that most people receive the Eucharist superstitiously. I do. I believe that. And here's what I mean by it. You know, it doesn't make any difference how I live when I walk out of here. I received it. Let me read to you a quote from an encyclical by Pope John Paul II. In other words, sacramental life is impoverished and very soon turns into hollow ritualism if it is not based on serious knowledge of the meaning of the sacraments. And catechesis becomes intellectualized if it fails to come alive in sacramental practice. See, sacraments are something you live. They're not something you passively receive. I'll tell you, I don't know many Catholics know that. I think most people, and this is I know this is a very simplified thing, but I'm trying to get you to think about it. I think most people view the sacramental life something like this. I was baptized, you know, and I go to Mass every week to get my booster pill, keep me going, you know. It started there, and I don't want to trivialize that, but I really do believe that, because, you know, I think I mentioned in one of the classes that in a Gallup poll, told Americans and says that there's 60 million born-again Christians. But he said, as they answered all the questions, there were only 2% of the people that were into something that was transforming their life. Isn't that interesting? Folks, we're talking about something that transforms your life. We're talking about a process. And I don't care where you are in the process, but it's a process. And when you're in a process, you're moving. You're not sitting still. It's a process. Okay? So when you look at things superstitiously, you're uneducated. That's ignorance. You know, poking a pin in a doll will kill a person. Folks, if poking pins in dolls would kill people, they'd be running the world. You understand? But I'll tell you what, I might get you to believe enough, Joy, that poking a pin in a doll like you would kill you, and it may kill you. It may really do that. I understand that. I understand the power of that kind of thinking. That's the way there are certain tribes that when a person had done something wrong in the tribe, you know what happened to him? He was excommunicated from the tribe. This is ancient tribes, and you know what they'd always go off and do? Die. When you're separated from the family, they would die. The next one is stripping yourself of all hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is simply saying or acting as though you're something you aren't. The word actually means to play act. It comes from Greek, and the Greeks were great actors, but they were actors different than we are. I'll show you how they were actors. When the Greeks were... When they were doing a play, if there was a happy time in the play, they held up things like this in front of their face, and they spoke. That meant these are happy words that are coming up. This is really how they did it, folks. They didn't act the way we do. They put this up in front of them. And this is hypocrisy is what this is. And when they were sad, they'd pick up another one with the mouth that turned down and put it up. Okay. So when you walk around acting as though you're something that you are not really, that's hypocrisy. When you're acting out being something that in you are not. See, there's a separation there. It's kind of hypocritical to receive Christ and walk outside church and act like Arnold Schwarzenegger, if you'll excuse me for picking on him. You understand? That's play acting, isn't it? See, there's a dualism there in your life. Okay. Now remember, don't get too hard on yourself. What we are is we're in the process of correcting this, and no one else can correct it. You know that? I couldn't correct this in anybody on this earth except me. There's nobody else. See, everything that I've talked about all week, nobody else can ever do for you. Only you. Nobody else can destroy the peace of God in you. Only you. Boy, isn't it wonderful God made it that way? Wouldn't it be horrible if God would have made it where Kathy could have made me happy or unhappy? Now, I know we'll say that, but that's our fault. That's a lie. Kathy cannot make me happy, and she can't take away my happiness. Isn't that awesome? But I know people that'll let other people do that. You have to let them do it. I've had people tell me before, if my wife left me, I'd be unhappy. Oh, God. And I look at them, and I'd say, were you happy before you met your wife? Yeah. Well, then she must not be your happiness. Now, I don't mean that you should want your wife to leave, but I'm telling you that others are not your happiness. And if they are, you're sick. That's part of the sickness right there. If you do this, you set yourself up. Most of us work intently to be unhappy. Y'all know that? We work at being unhappy. We'll do this. We'll say, if they have roast beef for dinner, I'll be happy. So what happens when they have split pea soup? I'm unhappy. Now, whose fault is that? Absolutely, that's my fault. Or you walk into a restaurant and you sit down and you say, you got your mind set on eating soup? And they say, what kind of soup you got? And the guy says, you say, give me chicken noodle soup. He says, we don't have any. Give me stew. We don't have any. Well, what kind of soup you got? Split pea soup. Split pea? My God, don't you? So what's the solution to that problem? Do they make you split pea soup? Here's the solution to the problem. Learn to like a lot of different soups. Or learn to eat something other than soup. See, the solution is, but most of us live our life, the other thing is the solution to the problem. Y'all, everybody in here is walking into a restaurant with somebody that just pitch a fit because things wasn't the way they wanted. God. See, life don't have to be like that. Learn to appreciate the smell of 1,000 roses, and then when one disappears, you won't be unhappy. How many people in here would like to increase your faith? I know the answer to that. I'll give you a very simple way to do it. Give up what you're certain of. Not many people want to do that, though. If you want to increase your faith, give up what you're certain of. Now, I'm going to make a statement here to you, and I'm just going to leave you with this to think about. Some of you will think about it, some of you won't, and it's all right. Doubt is the essence of faith. It is not the opposite. Now, let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you the kind of person that is the toughest person on the world for me to live with. It's somebody that's sure of everything. God. You know, let me tell you something. When somebody's sure of everything, they have no faith. See, faith's what you believe. And certainty destroys faith. And civilizations that begin to be certain of things, it destroys faith. And folks, 1,000 years from the time that civilization disappears, they'll all look back and say, what a bunch of dum-dums. The things that we'll be certain of will be disproved. Can you imagine if you and I could sit here and look at a group that was here 2,000 years ago, and we were talking about heaven. Where is it? It's up there. Why was heaven up there to them? Because the earth was flat, and there was a dome over the earth, and it sat on pillars, and it was dark underneath the earth. And hell was down there. That's where Sheol was. Now, folks, we know today. That's fine. We know today that there's stars up there, there's stars there, there's stars there, there's stars there. And you know what? We'll sit here now and say, yes, but David, we've got a lot smarter. Don't you bet on it. We may discover that when we think we're going out there, that it's in there. We may discover that we've been going in instead of out. That'd be an awesome thing. We just don't know. There's just so much we don't know. But people that know so much, it just kills you. The just man lives by faith, by what he believes. Okay, today, what I really want to talk about are words. Let me throw one more tidbit at you, though. And you'll remember these things more than you will all this other stuff I say. I know that. Let me tell you the three toughest things for a human being to do. The three toughest things, and every one of them Jesus calls us to do it. To return love for hate, include the excluded, and admit you're wrong. Those are the three toughest things for a human being to do. Return love for hate, include the excluded, and admit you're wrong. I know people that have never admitted they were wrong. Married people that live with each other for 50, 60 years. Oh, they know they're wrong. They could never admit that they're wrong. Not an awesome thought. Can you imagine a little old creature like this walking on this earth? You can go 100 billion light years out there and there's creation, and this little creature thinks he knows it all. To include the excluded. You know what I thought that was all of my life? That you would change your mind and think like me and I'd include you in my group. That's the way most people think about today. You know how you include the excluded? You leave your position and go where they're at. That's how you include the excluded. How did Jesus include us? He left where he was at and came to us. The writer of Hebrews says it like this. He went outside the gate. See, he went into the misery. Now, all of our life we were told not to go outside the gate. Why? Why would our church tell us we couldn't go to another church? You go to hell. Why? Afraid we wouldn't come back. And that's because our faith is bad. Bad faith. See, if you got good faith, you can go be with other people. I don't think anybody would be afraid to send me into a bunch of Hindus. I don't fear them. I've got friends that are Hindus. Or Jehovah's Witnesses. You know? I hope that's what's happening to our church today. That our faith, it's not like the big ham in the beans. We don't know why the hock's cut off. We know the whys. Therefore, we can go places. You understand? But when you don't know, when it's all convention, you've just accepted it. Mama did it, and I'm doing it. She went to church. I'm going. You understand? Okay, words. Words is the worst means of communication that I know of. Now, I've been standing up here talking for this is the fourth day, and now I lay that on. But you know what I mean, don't you? If I had every person in here stand up here and give 15 minutes to say what I've said this week, I'm sure I'd be flabbergasted as I listened to it. I'd say, good God, I didn't say that. Yeah, you know what I mean. And if I'd listened to you all week, you understand? Words are a real problem. Words are symbols. They point to something, and if you miss what they're pointing at, you miss it. There's a story about a guy that has a group of people at his house, and he walks outside, and they're going home. It's at night, and it's a beautiful, clear night, and the moon is full. And he points to the moon, and he says, look at the moon. And he turns and looks, and everybody's looking at his finger. They're looking at the pointer instead of what it's pointing to. That's the problem with words. Can you get drunk on the word wine? It's a sign. The word wine is a sign. It points to something. Can you love somebody with the word love? What does it mean when somebody says, I love you? It means they got vocal cords, Joy.